Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Peter Paul Verzola, and we are having a problem here again. The show should be starting now, and our guest is Richard Badisco. I hope I haven't lost him. And and anyway, it should be an interesting show. And Richard, are you there? We got this problem again. And doggone it. Okay. Richard, are you there? Well, anyway, Rich Badisco is supposed to call in, and he's an ex-retired San Francisco policeman who also happens to be a realtor from a famous family here in San Francisco and in California. And there's a lot of California history and a little bit of Russian history connected to this family. One of his ancestors, Badisco, was involved in the... here he is. I think he is... Oh, okay. Richard?
Yes, good morning.
Oh, good morning, Richard. Okay. How are you?
Oh, doing great in foggy San Francisco here.
Well, a lot of people's finances are foggy. I just gave you a bit of a blurb there. I'm still having a little problem working the system, but I'm working it out.
Okay.
Anyway, Rich, as a retired, well, you had quite a career and you have quite a family. A lot of people are concerned about the real estate market. We get conflicting reports from various analysts and that sort of thing. As an experienced realtor, what's your forecast for the real estate market?
Well, in all honesty, it's a good time to be asked that question because I think largely as availability goes for if a person's looking for a home, times couldn't get better. I think we possibly have a slight decline over the next 3 or 4 months, but for the most part, I think we've reached the bottom. There are opportunities out there. Unfortunately, a lot of people have lost their jobs, and it's just a tragedy that's the situation. But real estate itself, there's great opportunities. There's also tax credits available for first-time buyers. The interest rates are low. I'd be out there looking.
Okay. Now, a lot of people are looking, but they go to their bank or credit union, and they can't get a loan. Can you offer them some advice on how they can succeed in getting their loan or, you know, do a lease option? Is that viable for people, do you think?
Well, I think, yes, it's definitely a buyer's market, and it's recommended that people possibly use a lease option offered to sellers. But usually when you have that lease option, your price is going to tend to be a bit higher than an outright purchase would be. I think an outright purchase allows for a better negotiation for the buyer.
Well, now, could you briefly explain what a lease option is for people who are not familiar with that term?
Well, you simply go into a seller and say, look, I have this amount of down payment. I would like to lease your house for 1 year or 3 years or 4 years and make this amount of payment to you. And at the end of the term of the lease agreement, I will either buy, or if you decide to sell, I would have the first right of refusal or be in the position to purchase the home at that time.
Okay. Do these usually work out for people who are inexperienced with this type of real estate negotiation?
Well,
or does it depend?
That's a great question, Shadow.
a new Shadow.
I would say that they do work out, but the person opting to offer the lease option has to prepare themselves for when the option expires, that they have a sufficient down payment to purchase the house, or possibly come back and ask the seller to finance the home.
Oh, okay. Owner finance. Now, in these deals, we see signs around at least San Francisco and the Bay Area. By Bay Area, I mean Northern California. There's the Bay Area in Massachusetts. But they say seller owner sale. Is that advisable for people who are inexperienced in real estate?
No, I do not think properties offered by owners is the wise way to go for both the owner and the purchaser. Purchaser has to be prepared to have very legitimate professional inspections. After all, this is one of the greatest investments that they'll make in their life. They need to look at full disclosure from the seller, and that's where you want the basically impartial professional agent to come in and say, hey, these are the disclosure forms we use in California. The seller has to fill them out. The agent has to review them, maybe discuss in detail some of the answers that the seller is giving to the buyer. And so if there's a for sale by owner, the buyer should be aware.
And also, should they use a competent attorney?
Well, in California, we don't do that. We use real estate agents and brokers, and they're highly trained and regulated in California, not that we all don't have one or two people in any profession that isn't perfect. But for my part, over 30 years in the business, I've honestly never run across a dishonest, incapable real estate broker.
Oh, unlike other places. Of course, your family's unique because your mother was, bless her heart, was head of the San Francisco Real Estate Board.
Yeah, well, that's interesting because when I was 18 years of age, I was thinking of going into the police department.
Which you did.
And said, you know, that's not a very safe job, but law ran in the family. So I got my license at 18, and who would buy a house from an 18-year-old? So when I turned 21, I went into the police department. Sure enough, I was injured. So I always recommend that if people have an inclination to head toward real estate as an agent or a broker, that they take courses and which you can simply call up the Department of Real Estate in California or call up Kaplan or Anthony Schools and study and get your license and keep that license because you never know what the future holds.
That's good advice. When I was 18, I made the mistake of buying Arizona Desert, which had that cactus plant on them.
Well, I've run into people that have come to me and have done the same thing, and they're very sophisticated businessmen.
Well, I was just 18 and ambitious.
Make a good judgment.
Well, my place down in Kingman was where Terry Nichols and his partner accused of bombing the Oklahoma Federal Center. They ended up down there, and I thought, oh, well, I've been out of it for 30 years. So, you know, I got my money back. It wasn't that much, but it was a lesson. Rich, now you mentioned the police department. What advice would you give to a young person who's looking for a possible career in law enforcement, sheriff, police?
I think it's a tremendous profession, and I of course, you know, I was in for 16 years. My son is in the police department in San Francisco. I think he's a fourth or a fifth generation officer. And it's a wonderful job. You have to be cool, calm, collective. It's great if a person has an education. But the only real requirement in San Francisco is that a person that is applying for the job has to have a high school diploma. although most usually have an AA or a BA degree.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is the salary here? I understand California police are the highest paid in the nation. Is that a fact?
Well, gee, I don't know if they're the highest paid in the nation, but to me, you can't pay a police officer or a fireman
enough
for that bit enough to do the job. You can just look at this incident that occurred with this police officer and this Harvard professor, and you can see you've got two people that really appear professional running into a problem, but they'll both be having beers in the White House today. That should be interesting.
Yeah.
But getting back to the recruit, let me say that I did some checking on that recently, and I see that the San Francisco Police Department will not be given another exam in 2009, but there is a regular turnover, and if anyone out there is interested in getting information, they can call. Can I give a number?
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
415-734-3324 or 3325. And that's the, I believe that's the recruiting unit, and they could answer any questions someone might have. And I think it's the one of the greatest opportunities to become very, very knowledgeable in what is actually happening in society today.
Rich, you came in the police department at the time women were starting to be employed. Do you have any thoughts on how women have affected the police profession?
Well, I think it's great. Now, I recall an incident that personally I thought was some of the greatest knowledge I learned about women going into law enforcement. And I used to be sent out to handle various type of victims, and some of them were rape victims, others were suicides, and it's a very sensitive situation when you have to go out on those two. But I recall a gal coming in, I can't remember her name right now, she was almost immediately assigned to a unit that was given rapes and child abuse situations. And I thought from the standpoint of approaching a victim that was one of the greatest things the San Francisco Police Department did. However, now they're on patrol and patrol cars. I know there's a couple of gals on the motorcycle unit in San Francisco, and they make a little extra pay for the hazardous condition of that job. So there's a lot of room for intelligent people that want to help people.
One question that comes up, that people are stopped by, say, a woman cop, that some experience has been, especially with lesbians and that, or women perceived to be lesbians, that they seem to be, they have to be more macho to prove themselves or to prove a point. Could you comment on that?
Gee, that's not a tough one. I ran into one of the Mayor Newsom's bodyguards about a month ago, and she looked like a movie star. She was a gorgeous gal, but when I asked around, I found out she was a black belt and very, very able to take a person down. Whether she could take a punch or not, I don't know. But, you know, if you know how to take a person down and cuff them, or with good, smart, quick thinking, civility, you can calm a person down verbally.
Oh, here's one for you, Rich. I think I asked you this a long time ago when I first met you. I noticed that on the bumpers of some cars, they have the stickers with "I support the police, paternity organizations," that sort of thing. Do these influence, leniency when it comes to meter maids and cops who might stop you for a minor traffic
and
traffic?
Absolutely not. It doesn't do any good.
Doesn't work, huh?
No, I think the meter maids, it's a separate, really, from the police department, and they've got a job to do, and whether it's just to make revenue or to keep cars out of bus stops and in front of fire hydrants and so forth, they've got a job to do. It's a tough job to do, and I think that it would do no good to put stickers on cars for that purpose.
Yeah, I did see a one meter maid look at the sticker, shake his head, and like, you're getting the ticket anyway.
I've seen them tag patrol cars.
Oh, really?
They'll park overtime in a meter or something and go in and do something.
Mad cop, no donut.
Unmarked cars.
Oh,
not,
right,
not,
right.
Not
well, you know, it's interesting, I guess, because I did some of that work, that you can always tell, you know, usually, I mean, I guess you get even a cop. Do cops have six senses?
Six senses. I know what you're asking. I think once they've been in for a few years, that you do develop that. You can read a person and see if they're nervous or shifty in a way. But, of course, nowadays that's not enough. You need cause. But I think they do have six senses, yes.
I guess, yeah, well, you develop it over the room. Bill, you've been involved in some major political reform, like term limits. Do you think, and of course we worked together on some of that, do you think that the country's ready for term limits for everybody from judges on down to local offices like district attorney, public defender, that sort of thing, you know, aldermen?
I really do. I think that if I were to rewrite term limits in San Francisco, I would have included probably the city attorney, the district attorney, the sheriff.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Because I think that really, when a person gets an office, as I wrote in an editorial way back in 79, something develops inside of them, and they really believe that that their way is the right way and the only way. And in fact, what they should be in there doing is serving the public and mentoring people to come in and follow them up, and they can always go to higher office or some other office or just teach. But when a person's elected, their terms definitely should be limited. It keeps government honest.
Right. Well, you were also responsible in part for a term limit statewide, weren't you?
Well, of course, that was Congressman Shaborum. What his people did while I was running term limits in San Francisco, which actually took 2 years because the city attorney took me to court.
She lost.
Of course, she lost. She was demanding more signatures than the city had required at that time, and we got them. But the state term limits, what they did was they ran two issues. And the one of the issues more or less copied ours, and I had the pleasure of working with Shaborum and some of his staff in helping get that passed in California, and I think that it was very important as other states followed us.
Oh, getting back to real estate, Rich, there is a call now because of the major, it's bankruptcies of various states, that because of Prop 13, it limits their right to, the state's right to tax property, what they think the value is. And I understand that certain politicians want to overturn that. What's your forecast on that?
They're not going to overturn that. This is would be very, very bad for government. They're mostly older people that came under Prop 13, and it will not be overturned.
Yeah, it spread even up into Canada after, you know,
yeah.
Like I say, it starts in California and it spreads across the country.
Yeah, and you know, the government is a little panicky now because they mismanaged themselves. when prices were higher, and prices peaked in about 2007. They climbed, 2000 to 2007, the prices went up about 78%, and government was very, very pleased because they could tax these people. And now they lost a lot of revenue, and there'll be more foreclosures and more opportunities for buyers, but our tax revenues are declining, so they're now looking for other ways to grab more money as opposed to reorganize and manage their offices properly.
Now, some of San Francisco politicians have proposed legalizing pot and taxing it. What, you have any views on that since you had experience as a cop?
I could say I live west of the peaks in San Francisco, and I stay in touch with all of the people in the department. They have a great captain out here, and he's got a unique process now of making sure that at least one person on every block west of the peaks has access to a computer, and he puts out a daily memo on arrests in the city. And a lot of these arrests, it turns out, are illegal pot growers.
Huh.
I think they've had about 7 in the last year. Well, you know, pot growing in a house is really a fire hazard, and among the other health problems. And then these people, some of them state that they're growing it for health reasons, but it seems awful strange that lots of cars show up in the middle of the night to
big water bills
go into the garage, you know. And so I think that legalizing pot is a bad idea, and it's a bunch of nonsense. It's like prostitution. They're shutting down a lot of massage parlors in San Francisco, but they're really not massage parlors. So do you want to legalize prostitution? I don't think so, because it brings a criminal element to whatever area those locations would be.
Since we're on our cop shop and Car 54, where are you? Can you give us some reminiscence of your experience with Carl Malden, Michael Douglas, in the streets of San Francisco?
Well, those were great days. I think I met Mr. Malden and Mike Douglas in 1971, and I had an office on the first floor of the Hall of Justice. I was running what was then the Environmental Control Division, and they would film often in the hallway. And one day they came up and they wanted to do some filming, and we snapped a shot together. And after that time, I inquired about Mr. Malden. I think I had met him a couple of times, and God rest his soul, I believe he passed away just a few months
recently.
Ago.
Yeah.
And he was a wonderful man. He had a apartment up in Nob Hill, and he stayed in relatively good shape. He was a big man, and he would walk down California Street from Nob Hill and have lunch at Tatish's or walk into some coffee bar, and was really a San Franciscan as far as I was concerned.
Yeah, for those who don't know, Tatish used to be the city's premier fish restaurant.
Right.
And great sourdough bread, and they didn't take reservations. This was in San Francisco.
It was a very exciting area, and still is, right in the heart of the financial district, where you have all of the attorney's offices and doctor's offices. And
those who are still around.
It's full of life down there, and I think, you know, that's what he walked down the hill to see. I miss him, and he did a great job. I think Streets of San Francisco was a great show and very good for San Francisco.
Yeah, they're now on DVD. Rich, people are concerned, and insurance companies, and of course, I have a personal interest in this, these motorists who insist on using cell phones and texting, proposing a $1,000 fine and upping their insurance rates. What do you think? if they're fucked.
I agree. With all of the, I have to admit now, on the seatbelt thing, I just recently have started to put it on all the time. For whatever reason, I didn't. And I do think it takes time for people to adapt to newer laws. But the cell phone, it's a no-brainer. I don't think that the fine can be heavy enough. And if you're in a car, you have to be focusing on what you're doing because you're driving a vehicle that could kill in a minute.
Exactly.
Kill in a second.
Or injure, seriously.
So I don't think cell phones should be allowed when
what about the Bluetooth?
Being operated at all. And I think that their $1,000 fine is reasonable.
What about the Bluetooth? They claim that's safer.
Well,
I don't use it.
I have one. I can't get it working.
You pull over to the side to use it?
No, I turn it off when I'm in the car. You can always turn the sound down and take a message. In fact, I had a message while we've been on the phone.
Oh, okay. We've got.
That's the way I handle it. It's just you're driving a vehicle and you got to be responsible. And if a policeman stops you for it, then you got to pay the fine.
Yeah, take your phone away. I think also.
Yeah.
Rich, any other practical advice? We got a minute before the show ends.
Not at all, Peter. Always nice. Speaking with you, just be friendly to each other out there, and no reason to let anger get the best of you.
Right. Well, I noticed that Mr. Gates, I understand he's got some Irish in him, so maybe that's why he was angry. But I noticed his beer of preference is San Miguel.
Uh-huh.
What does that do for our economy?
Well, gee, you know.
The Philippine beer.
Let a man drink the beer he wishes to drink.
Well, they're calling this the Beer Summit. This is going to be interesting.
Yeah, it will be very interesting. And God bless you.
Thank you, Rich. And it's always good to talk to you. And I hope the family is feeling better, you know, your wife and all.
Yeah, things are fine.
Yeah. So those of you people who try to call in, I don't know what's the matter with the switchboard, or maybe the conversation was so interesting that you became engrossed and let it flow. So, but, you know, you're welcome to call in future shows, and we will have, I'm trying to get General Ingalls, the last British general who was up in Pakistan and Afghanistan for 40 years. He went to school with David Niven at Sandhurst, the British Military Academy. Also, the last British-American survivor of Gallipoli, also served in our army in World War II.
Wow.
The last British survivor of World War I just died, and he was at three major battles, the naval battle at Jutland in Denmark and the Ypres and Somme, and so was, my mind flips, I'm getting old. But anyway, we're working on those, and the software, we finally got a handle on it. I guess these software makers, I think they've got a cynical side to them. They don't understand that humans have to deal with their product, and I'm still trying to work that out. But
luck on the blog, though. I think it's great to get these people on. You get information out there, and information is important.
Yes, and good luck to you, Rich, and hopefully real estate will start to rise again, or sales will, and people out there, don't give up. Remember, if you don't ask and expect to receive, I tell everybody.
these are good times for buyers.
Okay. Thank you, Rich, for being on the show, and we'll do something again.
All right.
And to everybody out there, go to the website. We have the thing on terrorism against the police. It'll be up. We already have the mission station, which was targeted, but the bombing was unsuccessful, or attempted bombing. There are several other sites in San Francisco and in Marin County, which were a target, and also the Presidio. It wasn't just Park Station and Ingleside Station in San Francisco, which the media keeps talking about. Several police stations were hit, including, I forgot, Rich Badisco's car by a housing project. So we'll be getting those up on our YouTube Amicus Veritas site. There's plenty of variety of videos up there, which is my new interest, or renewed interest. And it's AmicusVeritas, all one word, on YouTube. And then our blog is amicusveritas.org. So, again, thank you for listening. Thank you. And those of you who tried to call it, we'll get the switchboard working. And hang in there.